April is National Poetry Month. Emily Bright is coming to South Dakota for a reading at Augustana University. You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. Emily Bright's latest poetry collection is called This Ground Beneath Our Feet. The poems within explore themes of groundedness and planting seeds for the future. I talked with Emily Bright via Zoom about how her work as a poet intersects with her work as a weekend host at Minnesota Public Radio News.
They both involve telling engaging stories in very small spaces. And so having the background in one kind of helped me when I launched into the other, even though you're wearing different hats, of course. You have different goals between poetry and journalism. And so there are certainly times where something that I hear, sometimes something delightful, sparks a poem. I learn something new and I want to investigate. Sometimes the hard-hitting events that we cover, it's a way of processing what I've experienced is to write in a poem, whether it makes it in the final book, as some of these have, or not.
You have a master's in poetry. Master's of Fine Arts. Does that inform then your journalism? Do you see the world? Do you see news in a more poetic way?
I'm a newscaster, and also on the weekends, you know, there are times where I'm doing the continuity in between the shows. And I always see those as an opportunity, one, to connect with the audience and think about what do people need to know right now? Where are people in the middle of their day? But also to bring some inspiration or some delight, or to keep people informed, depends on what's happening. And so I use my writing chops there to take what is happening in the world and draw connections from national to local. So that's where that comes out. I'm kind of in my fact-based brain when I'm, you know, behind the mic. But when I get to sit down and write, that's when I have the opportunity to use my imagination and draw connections and really think about just how vividly and musically can I tell this tiny story.
Yeah. Let's talk about This Ground Beneath Our Feet, which is your latest poetry collection, and your grandfather's mandate, direction, advice.
All of them.
To write about your family. Tell us that story.
Yes, he was a professor, and when he retired, he decided to, his focus was going to be genealogy. This was pre-internet, and he went deep. And so sitting around the table, we'd hear all these family stories that he had dug up, and they were fascinating. And I'm basically a writer in a family of engineers. And so he turned to me and said, I expect you to write this. You know, I want you to write a trilogy. Go big. And I said, yes, yes, Pop-Up, I'm listening. Take notes for me. And so I wrote some poems because these stories do get inside you. And I, in thinking about putting together this collection, which is so much about finding common ground, everybody has a family story. Everyone comes from somewhere that's part of who we are. And so I wanted to kind of bring that into the forefront and also pay some homage to all the work that he did.
Yeah. You make this connection between land that used to be under a glacier to the ocean that your ancestors traveled across thematically in the work. How did you make some of those connections between stories that might feel like they have nothing to do with you and the life that you live today, and then find, in fact, that earthiness does, in fact, live in your life today?
Well, I have such a love for, my grandparents lived on the coast of Maine, so I have such a love for water, and my dad studied geology. So between water and rock, that's a great way to ground us, literally, to connect us. And it's, I think when you're writing, when you're a reader, you're building up those empathy muscles, and you start to see and celebrate those connections that someone else might overlook. And so I think if somebody reads these poems from a totally different background than me and connects with some of the universal themes in them, that's a success.
Yeah.
That's delightful.
What's your job as a poet?
Ask that in a different way. I want to answer that well.
Yeah. I was thinking as I was reading your poetry that when you mentioned the universal themes, that there are so many times that you're writing about something that other people, the rest of us, all of us, you on a different day, might pass by and not notice. And so I was wondering, by reading your poems, if you were living as if one of the jobs of a poet is to do the noticing for us. So I was wondering how you think about that. When you see something and your process is to put it down on paper, are you thinking like, okay, hey, this is my job to do this on behalf of other people? Or are you coming at it from a different approach that I haven't considered yet?
Oh, that's a really good question. I think it's the gift of poetry is that it requires you to slow down and to take note and to be in that space of creative play. So at that point, I'm not necessarily thinking about what someone else will take from the poem, but I am just thinking about what is here that's worth noticing. What does this connect to? Mary Oliver is a master at that, and the rest of us just do our best to follow in her wake. Actually, one time I was reflecting upon that a lot was when I was a new parent. My first collection is called Fierce Delight, and it's all about those sleepless, wonder-filled, intense moments, those first, you know, years of parenthood, where everything is new and everything is wonderful and being discovered and looking up and seeing the leaves flutter in the tree. That's amazing. And so that was constantly, when I was in that time, putting me in that headspace of saying, there is so much to stop and see, and it is always there. Whatever your particular creative medium is, the invitation is to see it and enjoy.
You mentioned poet Mary Oliver, and one of the things I think she did so very well and many people react to is the use of second person, where it's like, you do this, or, and there are a few poems where you're kind of addressing the reader. How do you use that judiciously and well in poetry, addressing the reader?
Sometimes when you're writing, you just feel like there is an invitation here that's waiting to be given. Many of these poems, not all, but many do draw from my personal experience and memories and associations. And so when you're in the second person, it's a reminder to me, the writer, to open this up and say, well, what about you? You know, join me in this. I don't want to be navel gazing, right? I want this to be a conversation.
Another theme I noticed was this idea of inevitability, not being inevitable. this could go another way. The pilots could have turned around. This didn't have to happen until the last moment when it did have to happen, especially about events that are regretful or that hurt, that harm people. Why does that come to your pen so often?
So I also write middle grade historical fiction. So much of that, when you study history, is looking at these moments and these choices by normal everyday people that resulted in the facts that we are learning. And so when I'm writing in that genre, I'm inviting middle school age kids to imagine themselves saying, oh, well, we are just these people back then. They're just like us, making decisions in real time, good or bad, with consequences. And so I think I push against the inevitability idea that this always had to happen. There had to be war. There had to be death. There had to be whatever, and zero in on that individual series of choices as a way of saying we can make different choices now. I wrote a poem in response to the Annunciation school shooting on August 27th of last year. Actually, the collection was already complete at that point and in my editor's hands. And I wrote that poem about the impulse to come together in a vigil after tragedy, what calls us together when we'd rather be, you know, eating dinner with your family and doing all these normal things, to say we need to come together, we need to light candles, we need to sing, we need to gather. And there is a line in that poem about this could have gone a different way right up until the final moment. And so I sent it to my editor and said, hey, do you think there's room for one more? And he read it and said, yeah, we can put that in.
Often you address a fire, a school shooting, COVID, an election. When you're dealing with those topics, which 10 years from now, somebody might not remember particularly that news event.
True.
You're also writing to the future about something that happened and adding to the poetic record of it. I find that really, maybe that's not a question. I just find it remarkable and inspiring. Can
Thank you.
Regular people, by that I mean non-poets, use that as a technique to help them process the difficult things of the day? What would your advice be to using personal writing, whether that's poetry or journaling or what have you, to help navigate the difficult times that we live in?
Yeah, or taking notes in the calendar in your phone, whatever that format is, or drawing. I have this urge to document in some way the intense moments of life that I just know I won't believe this later. Like, we all live through moments in COVID where maybe people felt in the moment, I'm not going to believe this happened later, that I felt this way or had this response. The early years of parenthood, the death of a loved one, there are all of these moments that are so crystallized and intense. And sometimes we look back at them and go, oh, that can't have been true. I can't have thought that, did I? Especially when there's so much coming at you, I think there is a lot of freedom in being able to just document in some way, even just for yourself, this happened. I was here. And later I might feel completely differently about this. And that's fine. But to look back and also have some compassion at your past self and say, here's where I was in that moment when I was living through this and making these decisions. And then for people who are creative, I think that I think we tend to turn to the creatives as a society to say, ask them to kind of distill down these things for us into digestible pieces so we can kind of make sense of the world that we're in.
Would you enjoy reading something for us?
I'd love to. So I wake up very early in the morning when I'm on the radio on the weekends, and I have a habit of standing outside before I get in my car and drive off and just absorbing what the day is like. What is the weather? Are there stars out? And in the spring, I listen to the birds and just try to count how many different kinds of bird song that I hear. So the idea behind this title is, but first, before I do anything else, I do this. So it's called But First. Lately, I have risen in the spring pre-dawn to eavesdrop on the birds. Their insistent, overlapping call and response, I survived the night. Did you? Listen, I remind myself, stop planning your next step. Note how many kinds of song are tucked into the neighborhood. This blank-faced row of homes, wild with life. This empire of rabbits, dandelion, profusion, nourishing bees, fresh from hibernation and already busy. This thrum of insects, drone of frogs, this green noise of life. While overhead, new leaves unfurl nearly fast enough to hear. There is room enough. And you, with your packed bags of intentions and your loneliness tucked tight, you can list all your concerns for the wind to carry. Perhaps a bird will echo you. The world is lush and living. There is room. And you, what song are you singing?
Emily Bright presents poems from her book, This Ground Beneath Our Feet, and also Fierce Delight. That's at Augustana University on Monday, April 20th at 6 p.m. And that's our conversation for today. We hope that it served you. From all of us here at SDPB, I'm Lori Walsh. Thank you for listening.